the right to receive the stream of income from that. It would transfer that note by negotiation. Negotiation is endorsement and delivery of order paper. The words negotiation, the words endorsement, aren't in this statute. But if we want to dispose of that, we have the power to dispose by way of negotiation and delivery and endorsement. Similarly, if that note were secured by a deed of trust and the district wanted to transfer that deed of trust, wanted to dispose of that deed of trust, how would it do it? The nomenclature I'm familiar with is that the special district would transfer, would dispose of that deed of trust by an assignment. By an assignment. Assignment isn't in here because the word dispose is broad enough to encompass it. And I would argue that the word, we know the legislature includes assignment within the word dispose, because later in the Act, in Section 32, so still under the SDA, the Special District Act, Article 4, which has to do with water and sanitation districts, Section 507A, in a provision empowering water districts, the legislature said the governing body of any municipality or other public body has power under this Part 5 to sell, lease, loan, donate, grant, convey, assign, transfer, and otherwise dispose. And my articulation of those words is my emphasis of the point that the word dispose by an ordinary meaning would include any number of which ways to dispose of it. We know that assets are disposed by some. We have a reference within the same act where the empowering language by the legislature specific to the word dispose is to include the word assignment. And we know in our section that it's without limitation, that there is a broadening. And I want to also refer back to Section N of 1001. Whereas the Court of Appeals did talk about subsection N as the section that says, that's at the end of the enumeration, and it says, and others which may be incidental or necessary. Whereas the Court of Appeals did address that and said that assignment is not necessary and incidental to the word pledge. They were probably wrong. What they didn't say, what they should have said is it necessary and incidental to the word assign? But that was in subsection F that they never discussed, subsection F having the word dispose. But subsection N goes on to say, not after it says also necessary and incidental, it says in its entirety, such specific powers shall not be considered as a limitation on any power necessary or appropriate to carry out the purposes and intent of this article. So,
can I draw your attention to the Special District Association amicus brief?
Yes.
Because this is a case that may have ramifications on other existing financing arrangements. You practice in this field and you've handled this case, right?
Yes.
So, is or is not the assignment, the very issue that we're trying to get at today, usual and customary form of securing for the bondholders the legal financial arrangements that are the consideration for the issuance of the bond, since the Special District Act, obviously, in local districts in general, raising the money to finance the infrastructure is the bottom line of the district's function, is it not?
Very good.
So would you please help us with this issue of whether this case is going to undo or affect many other security financing arrangements?
The answer, will I help, is yes. The answer, will it affect, is yes. And the amicus was helpful to understand the prevalence of assignments, because it wasn't just for bond financing. Revenues to bondholders and trust indentures was noted. Fees to repay a developer for advances in purchase of tabs and development fees, which is the category that that SDI is in this reimbursement agreement. Likewise, rights to collect pledged revenues to a trustee on behalf of bondholders. It's prevalent. And the relevance of that is not only that the Court of Appeals turns that up on end, jeopardizes what is a common practice, but the significance to this court of that prevalence is that this court has previously said that it will give deference to the interpretation of statutes by agencies whose reasonable interpretations have over time come to be.
Well, I'm trying to get at this necessary and incidental clause to the functioning of the district, that subsection N that you just referred to.
And it's necessary because this is how bonds are financed. This is how we do it. It's analogous to the promissory note. It is routinely done by assignment because that's the way we accomplish as much. The words pledge are not so unique, are not so limited. In this case, district counsel testified at trial in our record, in our brief. Mr. Dalton said that there was no question in his mind that the assignment was valid and that it was going to liquidate the entirety of the debt owing. So yes, it upsets the standard of practice, it upsets the routine of practice, and the amicus brief is to that point. Am I responsive to
that? Thank you.
Counsel, may I pick up right there? I would like you to perhaps clarify something for me. This particular amendment assigned the right to receive the revenues, and as I read the amicus brief, it described assignment of the revenues themselves. And I'm wondering if there is any difference between the assignment of the revenues versus the assignment of the right to receive the revenues. Is the assignment of the right perhaps somehow broader in a way that makes a difference here, or that we need to be concerned about?
I believe not. I believe it is a distinction without a difference. I believe it is the argument that was cast by the respondent in this case to distinguish how the ruling by the Court of Appeals might not be as all-inclusive to bar assignments, because after all, this was just the right to receive something. I believe that this court should be aware that the trial court found that this was revenue. That's what this is. It's an asset. It's property. It was revenue of the district. And though we might talk, as I did a few minutes ago, about a promissory note, being a right to receive income in the future, we can talk about it in that term, or we can talk about it as an asset, as personal thing. So I believe it's a difference without a distinction.
Thank you.
127 years ago, this court said in Seeley versus May, which is in our briefs, that tax revenue that is assessed before assignment, tax revenue that is assessed can be assigned. The issue is revenue. The issue is, what is it? It's a right to receive something in the future. It can be stated in different ways. And in Seeley versus May, this court said, in colorful language of that century, but no different, that we have the right a county had the right to assign revenue. Now, that's a different issue. That's a general police power, and of course, we're talking about enumerated powers in the special district act. So I'm not trying to equate it for that reason. I'm talking about this for a different reason, and that is Your Honor's question. This is a right to receive revenue. Can this be transferred? Yes, it can. And that revenue stream can be transferred if two things are accomplished. Number one, was it assessed? Because it's a legislative function, of course, to assess it. And if it is received in satisfaction of an obligation, and what happened in the Seventh Amendment is that the Seventh Amendment to the reimbursement agreement by which the revenue, the income stream was transferred, what happened here is that $11 million of debt was paid off, $9 million of which was paid off by virtue of this assignment of revenue, as and when received. So the debt was forgiven in the year 2000, whether or not SDI would receive this money, and however long it would take to receive this money. When it was assigned, when it was transferred, the trial court found that it was the intention of the parties, as memorialized by exhibits and testimony, it was the intention of the parties that the amount assigned would receive interest, just as the district itself had budgeted prior to assignment that interest would be added, just as the language of the Seventh Amendment said, income as would otherwise be received by the district had it retained the amount. And in the absence of an agreement with regard to what that interest rate would be, SDI applied the interest rate that is, I'm looking for the statute, and don't have it in front of me. I do now, 512-101. That is the legislature's statement. If there's no agreement or provision law otherwise, for interest, this will be the rate, 8%. That's what was added. We refer in our brief to cases which permit the assignee to step into the shoes of the assignor, for private parties to mimic the authority of their governmental assignor. The Tivoli Ventures case is one such example. And these fees have been determined by the trial court never to be changed. The only thing that went to trial before the trial court was not the efficacy of the assignment, which speaks to the error that I'm not talking about by the trial court, but whether or not the adjustment of the fee by the inclusion of interest was appropriate. And the trial court held that the Seventh Amendment was broad enough to include the interest. The adopted forecasts, inclusive of interest going forward, memorialized as much, and it was an appropriate add-on that was a non-legislative function.
And Council, maybe I pick up right there. I had trouble finding, at least in the materials that we had before us, exactly how that assessment was calculated and where, certainly we have the language in the amendment that refers to assignment of the development fees, but I had trouble locating in the record where it spells out how those fees are assessed, and particularly the notion that interest may be added, the time value of money may be added. I noticed in the trial court order it referred to some trial exhibits, but the record as we received it didn't have them identified in terms of the numbering of the trial exhibits. So where in the record does that exist? What should we look to?
Well, there's a volume that is specific to trial exhibits. There's a volume that has all the trial exhibits. And the exhibits that were relevant to that issue included included Exhibit 11, which was Cherry Creek South Metro District's schedule showing 2% increases going forward. There was Exhibit 50 showing 4% forecasts going forward. through the year 2019. There was testimony that, in fact, they were raised from 1996 to 1999 at 4%. The Seventh Amendment provided that it assigned the development fees when and as it would otherwise have collected them, when and as. And the trial court, entertaining the testimony of the parties, understood that to mean something more than just a fee frozen in the year 2000, because had fees been frozen in the year 2000, it would negate the language of that of the parties.
Thank you. I'm sorry. That's very helpful. And the reason that it's important to me is I noticed that even you referencing those exhibits mentioned nowhere an 8% that was charged by the district at any point. It was 2% and sometimes 4% at others. That strikes me as at least some sort of exercise of discretion about the amount of interest that's being assessed. And that's the part that concerns me here. With the delegation of perhaps that exercise of discretion with respect to interest.
Your Honor, I think it's the opposite.
Okay.
With respect, had in the absence of the agreement, so these parties agreed to everything that should be assigned, how it should be assigned, and so forth, but there was no agreement with respect to what that specific interest rate would be. It would have been discretion had SDI chosen or adjusted or determined at different times what that interest rate is when there is a statute that says, when the legislature says, in the absence of an agreement, this is the interest rate to use. So by relying on the statute, I would argue that the SDI was not exercising discretion. It's 8% compounded annually.
Thank you.
I wanted to follow that up because why didn't the board retain the authority to determine the interest rate from time to time?
It wasn't part of the, I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. And it may be because of the finality that the Seventh Amendment was intended to accomplish. We're done. We have no relationship.
Well,
we can sign this.
It seems to me the opposite, that if it's not spelled out, it's the board is retaining the authority to do that. You already have the, I think you said, you have to have the assessments that have to go through the regular procedure by the legislative authority, the board itself. Why isn't interest an ongoing function of the board if it's not mentioned otherwise?
Because the function of the district was to establish the fee. It did so, and by it didn't retain the rights to those revenues. It assigned that, it assigned this revenue outright, and in doing so it chose to wash its hands of that, and that's the void in the agreement that the court looks to common law for, or in this case, the statute for interest on. That's the best the court had to do, not to rewrite the agreement. Your Honor, if I have a minute and 22, I'd like to hold on to that.
You may, thank you.
Thank you.
Council, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity, Justices. It's a pleasure to be in this building. That's all I can say. I want to start out with a comment on Mr. Silver's statements. First of all, I think his arguments demonstrate something that's bothered me as a special district practitioner for 30 years. That is what I do. And that is that over that time period, I've seen special districts changed into big business as opposed to small government. we seem to be losing track of the fact that these are creatures of statute. They have no existence outside of these statutes. And when you read 32.1.1001, it is a delegation of authority. It is not a broad statement of things that can and cannot be done. Without the words in that statute, these creatures don't even exist. It's in their genetics that they can do what the statutes say they can do, and nothing more. Unfortunately, this case has a context that's been ignored. And that is that this district assigned these rights to receive revenues to a developer that had owned the property. Subsequently, my client came along and purchased the property and found out that now this developer claimed to not only have the right to the fee that had once been approved by the special district, but in addition to that, to the interest of 8%, a huge amount of money. 8% never approved by the district board, never adopted by the district board. In addition to that, at the trial, the president of SDI testified that he considered the fee to be the aggregate amount, utilizing what the district had used when it set the fee, which was a specific number per acre. He then, as property was developed and parks were built from which no fee would be collected, took the amount that would not be collected and spread that out over the other properties. The bottom line is, a private party took control, dominion and control, of a governmental fee and the powers and the rights that go along with it and imposed it on private citizens within that governmental entity. The first question that you certified was whether the Court of Appeals erred in holding that the Special District Act does not empower districts to assign their assets to pay off district indebtedness. But that was not what the Court of Appeals held. The Court of Appeals held that under the plain language of 32.1.1001J1, which I'll call the fee statute, the district had no specific power to assign its right to receive development fee revenue. The Court of Appeals was absolutely correct in holding that under the plain language of the fee statute, the district had no such specific power. And absent that power, it cannot act in that way. The specific language of the statute allows for a pledge of development fee revenue. It does not confer a power to assign any right to receive revenue. As I stated earlier, special districts are creatures of statute. They can only exercise the powers that are expressly conferred upon them. If there is no statement saying that the special district may assign the right to receive revenue, it does not have the ability to do so. The development fee powers, as everyone has agreed, are conferred solely by 32.1.1001J1. That fee statute states, for and on behalf of the special district, the board has the following powers, and as we know, only the following powers. J1, to fix and from time to time to increase or decrease fees, rates, penalties, or charges for services and programs and facilities furnished by the district. The board may pledge such revenue for the payment of any indebtedness of the district. Until paid, all such fees constitute a perpetual lien, another power that isn't exercised by private citizens. The portion of the statute that expressly confers the power to impose fees, rates, tolls, and charges also states that revenue may be pledged for payment of debt. This language conferred the power to fix the fee and to pledge the revenue from the fee. The power to impose the fee and the power to utilize it in specific ways is within the terms of the delegation. The district had no power to assign the right to receive the fee revenue. The power conferred is to pledge.
Council, can I just talk you down? So I guess your argument is that the only place that is even references fees is J. So that is the sole power that can apply here? I mean, is that what you're arguing? That it's just impossible in the way that the statute is, or the act is set up, that a power could be somewhere else dealing with revenue?
There are various powers throughout the statute, but this is the delegation that authorizes the creation of any kind of governmental fee and all of the extraordinary powers that go along with that. And within that delegation is this statement about the pledge.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm just trying to get you to just directly address the dispose power. Why could it not be that the power to collect a fee is in one section, but you could dispose of it in another section?
That could be the case, but in this section you have that specific statement that the fee revenue may be pledged for a debt. We have here a debt. We didn't have a pledge. We had something different take place in the signing.
Okay, but so why does dispose of not work? Maybe I'll just ask it that way.
Dispose of doesn't work, first of all, because it's a separate section of the statute. It doesn't talk about assignments. It talks about, I'm sure you find this in my notes, and I'll give you a better answer. Section F deals with disposing of property. It talks about the ability to acquire, dispose of, and encumber real and personal property, including without limitation rights and interests in property, which is where they reach. The appellants argue that the Court of Appeals has ignored that section, but the Court of Appeals ruling has no effect on that section and is not affected by that section. First of all, the fee statute section is clear and unambiguous. It clearly deals with fees. When you go down to section F, it doesn't say anything about fees. It talks about encumbering real and personal property without limitation, rights and interests in property, leases and easements.
So revenue could not be property.
Revenue can be property, and you're pointing up something that's been a difficulty in this case all along. And Mr. Silver made some arguments that actually touched on this. You probably noticed in our briefs we spent a lot of time trying to define terms, because from the very beginning of this case it's been very difficult to pin down what people are talking about. The notion of a development fee is often used to talk about money. Development fee is the money, or the development fee is the exaction. It's the government action, the procedural part. Same thing that happened with revenue. Revenue is sometimes talked about as the money in hand. So a development fee revenue is the money I got from a development fee. I think that money can be assigned or pledged, as the statute says. But until it's in hand, it is part of the governmental powers delegated to assess a fee. It's not revenue.
Okay, so this is the argument that you can assign the actual revenue, which could be property, I guess, under your argument, but you can't assign the right to receive the revenue.
Correct.
Or the fee.
Okay. That's correct.
Just remind us now. The debt the district was trying to pay was incurred for doing what?
For the developer had installed infrastructure that would service the district.
All right, so basically what we have here is a district trying to figure out how to refinance or pay off a large amount of debt it owed, and it used this device.
That's correct.
Correct, okay. And that's not done typically in the industry. Your practice, there's not assignments that have to do with financing arrangements by districts?
It is done typically, but not by, and I'm sorry, it's not typical to, in my practice to see assignments. We see pledges. And in fact, if you look at the wording in the Seventh Amendment, there's sort of a mixture of notions. The assignment of the revenue and the right to receive it as opposed to a pledge. The difference really comes down to whether or not those governmental powers are exercised by the government or by somebody else. Here, you know, despite what all these documents say, the private party took control of that fee, changed it, altered it, doubled it, however he chose, which is, of course, a larger problem. But if you really get down to the, you know, the cutting edge, the issue is who has the power and who controls the fee. Once that fee results in money, the district can do whatever it needs to do with it. The problem is when the district allows somebody else to utilize its powers to collect money or some other purpose. When you look at, there was some discussion in the brief about tax liens, the sale of tax liens, but there's a misperception in there about how a tax lien works. If I, quote, buy a tax lien, I don't get the right to the lien. In fact, if you call the county right now and ask them who owns a tax lien, they will not tell you. The person who owns the property does not pay the person who's satisfied the tax lien. They pay the county because it's the county's lien. It's the county's tax or the government's tax. They never deal directly with the property owner. That's because what the county is doing is pledging the revenue from the satisfaction of the tax lien to the person who's.
I understand, but what I'm trying to get at here is what the essential dispute you have that's based on the law. And it sounds to me it may be the increase of the fee in the guise of the interest that is not contained in any resolution, the equivalent to an ordinance, a legislative act. Is that the gist of this thing, or isn't it?
That is the gist of it.
They increase the fee without going back through the board.
It's not just the increase in the fee. It is also the exercise of the authority to change when the fee was collected. You saw in the briefs, part of the discussion in this case concerns the ENT lie contract. What happened there was the appellants entered into a contract to sell property, later assigned that to my client, then came back and said, oh, by the way, the government's development fee was rolled into that purchase price. Now you owe us money for that fee, which was assigned to us. Proof that what happened was a private party took control of the fee, how it was assessed, when it became due, the amount, added interest, and exercised the government's legislative authority. And that authority is so clearly stated in the statute, in that delegation, the power to fix and from time to time increase or decrease fees, rates, tolls, and charges, and penalties. All of those things were being exercised by a private party in this case. That cannot be done. But in addition to that, the private party was claiming the right to the governmental lien, the perpetual lien. A perpetual lien is not a benefit that any private party has the right to. It's a governmental power. So the private party was taking advantage of the legislative authority of the district, or to switch that around, the legislative authority of the district was assigned to a private party.
Counsel, you indicated that you practice a lot in this area, that this is your area of expertise.
Yes, Your Honor.
And in light of that, I'm curious what you think of the amicus's brief from the Special District Association, which is very definitely against your position.
Your Honor, I'm not sure it is against our position as much as it appears. I think the amicus expresses concern that taking away the ability to again, there's confusion about pledge and assign, but to pledge those for a debt is going to harm the ability to issue bonds. But number one, the statute says pledge. In my experience, which is pretty broad, the bonds that we do pledge. I do not know a single bond trustee who has gone out and collected revenue from a property owner. I do not know a bond trustee who had that authority or power, or who has ever exercised the authority of the government to go out and collect or utilize the governmental lien. So I think I disagree, number one, with the facts. And I also think there may have been a reaction that perhaps the consequences of this case are broader than the new law. Did that answer your question, Aaron?
Sure, thank you.
So the statutory power of the district to pledge the fee revenue is the power of the district. It cannot be viewed as a limitation on other existing powers, for instance, in subsection F. The statement that the board may pledge the revenue for payment of a debt is part of the delegation of power. There is no other power granted or delegated to alienate from the district the right to receive development fee revenue. The district's power is to pledge. The Court of Appeals recognized the significant difference between a pledge and an assignment. The pledge of revenue is similar to what we talked about a little while ago, the possibility of assigning cash in hand, or a promise to pay money once it is received utilizing the governmental powers. An assignment is the right to receive a development, an assignment of a right to receive development fee revenue assigns to the assignor the powers of the district. The Court of Appeals pointed this out specifically, the original obligation of the government entity is extinguished and a new obligation arises to pay the assignee. That one sentence is very significant because this fee is a governmental fee that only exists and only has the powers associated with it that it has because it's imposed by a government. You and I don't have the power to exercise a perpetual lien. We don't have the power to just assess fees against property or parties, and yet that's the power that was exercised here. I would almost state that absent that fee being in the hands of the government, there is no fee. It's a governmental fee. And those public officials stand for election so that people can express their concern about that fee. They also have open meeting requirements so that people can come and argue with them about the fee and see why that fee is being imposed. Here, that connection between the citizens of the government and the fee was broken. A private party took the fee, exercised the governmental powers. It left the citizens with no ability to address the holders of that governmental power and imposed upon them a governmental fee with no recourse.
What is the most limited way we could write this opinion from your standpoint? Because you're really objecting to the interest rate, aren't you? And aren't you objecting to the recourse of the present board to look at what the fee ought to be? I mean, you're basically saying that there was a contract that delegated away by the original board or whoever this board was, everything having to do with setting a fee. Now, is there a way to write this opinion that only goes at this interest rate aspect of it that would retain in the board going forward the right to set the interest rate?
Your Honor, I think that would have to be done in an entirely different case, because that would be a dispute between SDI and the district. I do think that a district fee could be valid and would still be valid, except for the fact that because of the manipulation that went on with the fee, you can never go back and recalculate what that fee ought to be. In the Court of Appeals argument, one of the questions that was asked of me was, are you saying that the district could still impose the fee? And the answer is yes, it could. Now, it may not be quite that simple because there was this accord and satisfaction entered into with SDI. And as Your Honor knows, the fee has to be rationally related to a legitimate government purpose and the cost. I'm not so sure there's a cost any longer to justify the fee. However, I'm not arguing that a fee cannot exist if it's taken back over by the government.
Well, counsel, can I follow up on that? I mean, I guess what Justice Hobbs is asking or suggesting is that aren't you really complaining about how this particular assignment was accomplished as opposed to the power of assignment generally? I mean, aren't you arguing that in this instance, they assigned too much? They didn't kind of freeze the fee in time, and they allowed, or however that happened, allowed it to be changed. And isn't that a problem with this particular assignment, not the assignment power generally?
That's correct, Your Honor. We had a long conversation in my lunchroom yesterday at the office about exactly this. The problem is not the notion of assignments. Governments have the power to assign things. It's the scope of the assignment. It is what is it that's being assigned? If it's the ability to use some kind of coercive power over your citizens, that's a problem. If it is legislative authority, that's a problem. If you're assigning under F property or other things like any other entity that is not governmental, it's not a problem.
Well, what assignment would have been fine under your test then, in this case?
In this case, because of the word pledge, a pledge of the revenue would have been fine. The district could then receive the funds, turn them over to SDI. Nothing wrong with that. Unfortunately, it's not the case. This is not the case in which something in between happened. I don't know, because this is not the case, whether I would argue that the district couldn't say, we have assessed a fee, and when it becomes due, we will call you, SDI, and you can go pick up the check from the property owner.
Couldn't the private company collect the money too, just as long as they didn't change the terms? I mean, isn't that what you seem very focused on the collection part.
Yes. I'm focused on the collection part because it's part of that, this whole legislative scheme and the notion of a pledge. Again, it's so hard to answer that question. Could you assign the right to somebody else to go collect the revenue that you have fixed and is now due? Probably. I would have nothing to fight about if that was the case. That would be less than just a very technical issue.
But I think that sort of touches back on what both Justices Hobbs and I were getting at, and that is that added aspect about setting additional interest. In other words,
yes.
If the district had said, this is going to be the $1 million figure for this development fee, and someday you can go collect it whenever it comes due, at that point, any legislative discretion has been exercised in setting that number.
That's
and at
correct.
That point, it's really a ministerial function, arguably, to go pick up the check.
That's
so
correct, Justice Marcus.
The concern that I continue to have, and I think some of my colleagues may have, is the discretion about adding some time value of money and setting an interest rate, whether it's pegged to statutory interest rate or whatever the district had done in the past, 2%, 4%, Is that really the concern about the nature of this assignment that's the crux of the problem?
That is the crux that brought this whole issue to light, is that 8% increase that was never authorized, never imposed by the district. That's what brought it all out in the open. Then all these other things, you know, fit into the same category. But you are correct. That is, you're honing in on exactly the issue that brings it all out in the light and shows the major problem and is undisputable.
Can you speak to the 512-101 argument?
512-101, a couple of things. It is not part of the governmental powers. Again, this is a government fee that the district is authorized to fix and from time to time make changes in the fee. Nobody else is. That statute, that is the interest statute, isn't it?
It is.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Or that's what I'm told.
That statute simply deals with situations where parties don't have an agreement on an interest rate. It doesn't matter whether the district and SBI, even if they did have an agreement on their interest rate, the district still has to impose that as part of the fee. It is its power to fix the from time to time increase, decrease, fee rates, penalties, and charges. So that legislative function still has to be done by the district. That statute has no application. Secondly, these fees weren't due. That statute talks about a debt that's due. They're not due under the district's formulation until, under what was the district's formulation, until there's a building permit. What SDI did was they took the assignment and then at some point said, this is taking too long. We are going to start adding 8% interest from the date of the assignment. That is exercising. If they were allowed to then impose the fee, that would clearly be the exercise of legislative authority of the district.
Am I understanding you correctly that the real difference between pledge and assign is the government's continued involvement in the case and therefore their accountability?
That is a big part of it, Your Honor, because it is a governmental power delegated to the government. And it is a coercive power and carries with it. As an example, the first case we were in, this wasn't the first case we were involved with in this matter. There was a case in which a bank foreclosed on a piece of property in this same development. That bank found it impossible to sell the property because the development fee demanded by SDI was so high. We wanted to bring that to light at that point, and they decided to settle and gave the property back to SDI. That coercive power, being able to say, there is a governmental lien of first priority on your property unless you pay a private entity, is the kind of thing that must be avoided. The public officials have to remain accountable for that, not only because they're the ones who are delegated the authority, but because they're the ones who are delegated the authority to exercise that power.
Right.
So there's no recourse for the citizens of a local government once you sever that chain.
Thank you.
The pledge?
You would agree that 8% could have been put in there? I mean, when this deal was originally structured between the district and the developer to repay the upfront advance of cash on the infrastructure, there could have been an interest rate inserted there. Or a range of interest rates, or it's something that would trigger. I mean, what we're looking for here is a legislative act.
Correct.
The board took.
Right. And I do think that the board could have said when it adopted the fee that the fee is $1,700 per acre plus 8% and will increase 8% each year. It did not do that.
So why can't the statute fill in what the normal interest rate would be, contemplating that nobody gives the future value of money away in a deal like this? Why would you do that?
I don't know why you would do that, but but the statute cannot be read to impose upon that legislative authority, which is required to be exercised by that government. So a separate statute that's not even in the special district.
So in the absence of specifying, it has to come back to a legislative action to set it.
Yes, and that's because those powers in the statute are, as we said at the very beginning, those are the powers of the district. There isn't anything else. So in order for the district to act, it must act within those powers. So you can't just have interest rates being added by some kind of an agreement with the parties or automatically. The board that governs and has power over its citizens and is going to impose this fee on them must act publicly in the open so that people can see what's going on. I'm out of time.
Thank you.
No further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Silver.
Thank you. I'd like to offer a very compound sentence in my remaining seconds. What was accomplished at a public meeting of the special district in January of 2000 was the assignment of a receivable at the record of 3315, paragraph 15 of the court's holding was that the receivable was transferred for the last of the commercial property, which is relevant to the issue of why not retaining power. That's at the record of 3316, paragraph 18 of the court's finding. And what that receivable, when it was transferred, was intended to include by the trial court's finding, based upon the evidence that I referred to in my opening remarks, was the ability to anticipate future revenue as and when received. After all, the debt that was being forgiven itself accrued interest. That portion of the debt that was satisfied by other than the assignment of revenue bore interest. And as the assignee, if we enable special districts to assign, then at that public meeting, the assignee stepped into the shoes of the assignor, and it wasn't a governmental function to simply ministerially collect the fees that were assessed by the special district and came due with building permits at the 512-101 statutory record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Slick. Thank you both, counsel. This case will stand submitted.